how it feels. You understand what it is to be a stranger in this unfriendly land. Here's my hand.
Bobby Blue Bland. Bobby Bland died. Passed away last night. He was 83 years old and one of the great blues musicians of our time. And we rest in peace, Bobby Bland. And we'll be listening to music at the next break, too, before we go out. On the way to the conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's national foreclosure settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. We are now joined by Delegate Bill Frick, who is a Maryland State Democrat representing the 16th District in Montgomery County. He is running to be Maryland's Attorney General in the election 2014. We'll be interviewing all the candidates individually and having a debate here on the show, which we're going to have this summer, but it's just too difficult. This summer, we'll do it in the fall and later on towards the vote itself when you have a chance to vote. And Delegate Frick, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Very happy to be with you.
Folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Jump onto our Facebook page or tweet us at Mark Steiner. Your questions for Delegate Frick and what you think the next Attorney General should be focusing on. Of course, unless that Doug Ansel pulls a fast one and decides, I'm not running for governor, I'm running for Attorney General again, then who knows what's going to happen.
That would scramble things a bit, right?
That is possible.
It is possible. The Attorney General has already said that he doesn't anticipate running for another term.
Anticipates the operative word.
Yeah. Well, he's being a little cagey about what his plans are, but he has given myself the green light to go ahead and start taking action and getting around the state and let folks know I'd be interested in serving.
So some people politically would say it's a leap from delegate to AG. Why are you making this leap?
Well, it's really driven by the issues.
You're not the only delegate. There's several delegates running in this making this leap, right?
Right, right. Well, there are four state legislators looking at the race. All of us have represented the same number of constituents, right? We've all represented 147th of the state. But for me, this is really driven by the issues. I've been very passionate about consumer protection issues as a member of the legislature, worked on credit card reform, predatory lending, things like that, and had some good success. But State Attorney General Mark is a great job where you can make a huge difference on these issues. You can go out and using the broad-based consumer fraud statutes and consumer protection statutes, you can fight these fights and there's no lobbyist or procedural hurdles to get in your way. You just go out and do justice.
Many people would probably say similar things. I remember Doug Ansel said similar things when he ran for Attorney General the first time in my interviews with him. So what sets anybody apart? It looks like you have four people running, all of whom you would put on the liberal progressive end of the spectrum of politics in Maryland. So what sets you apart?
Well, I think
for those of us who never met you in Baltimore,
yeah,
especially.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you look at my record, you see a guy who's been fighting the fights that we need to have fought, particularly on these consumer protection issues. When it comes to consumer issues, it's very easy to sit back and let things to be done to our consumers. And you really need somebody in the AG's job who's going to have the guts to stand up and say, I see what's happening here and I'm going to stop it. So, for example, there's these ads that I'm sure you're very familiar with for freecreditreport.com,
yes,
freecreditscore.com.
Right.
There's a problem with those, Mark, which is they're not free. These are basically scams run by the credit reporting agencies, where they lure people in with offers of free credit reports and free credit scores and then actually slam people into $15 a month for services the consumer never wanted. And I've said, look, we've got to put a stop to this. I put in legislation to try to put a stop to it. We couldn't get it through. As Attorney General, that's the kind of thing where you need to take some initiative. You need to be willing to stick your neck out and, pick a few fights that need to be fought. And you see my record in Annapolis. You see a guy who's not afraid of big fights against powerful interests.
So one of the things that we've been talking about on the show here in the last few weeks has been the and folks, we do want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I'll check Facebook here in just a moment. We also just want to take a little fast break here to let you know some breaking news we'll be covering in depth in the next 2 days. that the U.S. Supreme Court just ruled in the affirmative action case, and they have sent it back down to lower court. And we'll be talking about what that means. There is one dissent, Ginsburg dissented, and we will be covering what that means in the coming days. But the majority opinion, just digression because of breaking news, yeah. The Fifth Circuit is vacated remand. It said the holding, and so he's saying it has to go back down to the lower court, and we will get into that in more depth in the coming days. Just want you to know that happened.
I was looking in the green room, Mark, and it looks like part of that decision was driven by what exactly the petitioners were challenging there, and it seems like it was not as momentous a holding as some folks expected. And a lot of people were looking today to see if we could get the Defense of Marriage Act or Prop 8 cases, opinions from the court, and those didn't come through.
So as Attorney General, if you had to deal with a question like that in Maryland, how would you deal with it?
As a question of the affirmative action?
Yeah.
Oh, I believe in affirmative action, and I certainly think it's constitutional when it's done properly. Look, we've got a long heritage of racial inequality in this country, and I think it would be foolhardy to think that we've got it solved and we can only rely on completely race-neutral solutions.
So coming back to where I was, we've had a lot of conversations recently with the ACLU about their report that very few elected officials have commented on the number of arrests in the state, marijuana arrests.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we do know is that Maryland has the fourth highest number of arrests for possession of any place in America for people who, of color, and which is pretty stunning. But that in where you live, in Montgomery County, that black folks are more than three times as likely to be arrested than white people for marijuana. Even though we know that the actual numbers of the per capita numbers are the same, and the real numbers of people smoking reefer or using it are more white than black in our state, but nobody seems to be arrested who's white, and that that's a huge issue.
Yeah.
So, as Attorney General, you are our chief legal officer.
That's right. Well, the Attorney General of Maryland tends to be more of a civil lawyer's job. It doesn't have as direct a role in criminal prosecution, and most of that work here in the state is done by the state's attorneys. But as a policy matter, certainly in the wheelhouse of the Attorney General and, frankly, in the wheelhouse of the legislature to deal with. You've seen, I think, over the last few years, a generational shift and a mind shift about marijuana and how it should be treated. And certainly, you know, I'm 38. My generation doesn't say it the same way as two generations ago did. And I think you see a real...
You mean you want to put more people in jail?
No.
I'm just kidding.
No.
Because me and my generation wanted to have it legalized 50 years ago, but go ahead.
Well,
anyway.
March to a different beat than my parents. But you see more and more people just simply not having faith in the way the federal government treats this. And when California and Colorado march in very different directions, you see that becoming so mainstream. You know, in Maryland in 2012, we passed a bill to dramatically reduce the penalties for de minimis amounts of marijuana possession. So instead of being a year in prison, this is now 90 days. That's a step in the right direction. I think you could probably go further in terms of the state penalties. But remember, as long as marijuana is a controlled substance is under federal law, true legalization can't happen. It's got to come from...
I know it's not the AG's role. Nor is the numbers I'll come up with in a moment about the numbers of people in our Maryland state prison system, the vast majority of whom are there for nonviolent crimes,
right.
Many of them who are addicted, many of whom are in need of mental health therapy and are not getting it. And when we say that somebody can go to jail for 90 days because they have X amount of marijuana in their possession or whatever, even that to many is like... outrageous. That means a young person, especially a young black person. I mean, in Maryland means usually a young black person will have now a record they didn't have before.
Mm-hmm.
And so while that Maryland might say, well, we can legalize like they did in Colorado or Washington, or at least say to the attorney generals and the state's attorneys, we say that maybe we should stop arresting people for this.
Right.
I mean, the things that can be done.
And part of the benefit of putting it in the 90 days instead of a year is that that now goes into district court instead of circuit court. There are many – it increases the chances of individuals going into diversion programs. I agree. I was pointing out that bill passed recently as a sign of progress. I think generationally we're seeing more and more leaders have a different perspective on these kinds of issues so that we're more interested in being smart on crime than just being seen as tough on crime. My generation grew up seeing the racial disparities in cocaine sentencing, and we all see that as a real fundamental problem and something that we need to do something about. So as the Attorney General isn't so much the prosecutor, but can be involved in these conversations.
So how would that happen? Let me give you an example. Yeah. I mean, and then come back to some of the issues that you care about in terms of AG and some questions about what it means to be an Attorney General for the state of Maryland. A third of the people in our state prison system are there for drug-related cases, at least a third. These are the state stats, not the ACLU stats. So, and over 60% are there for nonviolent offenses. And many people would argue, as a former head of Patuxent argued, former warden Patuxent, that he said that after my years in the state prison system, I'd say that 80% of the people incarcerated for these long terms should not be incarcerated. They should be in a different kind of corrections. Now, you can't run the correctional system as AG, but you have the bully pulpit.
Right.
You have the ability to say things that may make others who are elected as well a little uncomfortable, but maybe you have to wrestle with things. How would you approach these issues?
Well, you would use that bully pulpit, and there's actually maybe more power than we might think, because in Maryland, the Attorney General serves as the lawyer, the in-house counsel to all the different state agencies. So you do have some of your own people working on the inside, and you can use not just the state AG doesn't need to just defend lawsuits and try to knock down the ACLU lawsuits. They can also work with their clients to try to find better ways of doing things. So that is a strength. That counseling function is something I would try to utilize as much as possible. If I'm elected, and it might irk the future governor a little bit, but we'll all be working on the side of justice and on the side of our constituents.
So many people are. There have been arguments on the show before with other attorney general candidates and with attorney generals in the last 20 years, attorneys general in the last 20 years. About what the role is of the AG. Do they work for the governor? Do they work for the state? Does the AG work for the people? Who are do you see the AG as being the lawyer for?
Mark, I don't think that one's very hard.
Let's see what your answer
is.
The
Attorney General is elected by the people.
Uh-huh.
Your obligation is to the people. It is to the men and women of Maryland. You are counsel to the state government. You are counsel at times to specific officials within the executive branch. But your obligation at the end of the day is to the people of the state, to doing justice and to doing right by Marylanders.
How does that play out, let's say, in what one of the things that concerns where this, you know, where we are now at Morgan State University? The station is owned by Morgan State University.
Right.
I'm not an employee of the university. Let me say that up front. We have a contract here to do our program, but that just makes things very clear. But that the Attorney General's role in the issues of funding in HBCUs is a huge piece.
Right.
So you're sitting in that AG's office, today, let's say. That would be in your lap.
Yeah.
How would you approach it? Same, differently?
Well, I think when you're presented with a case that you, as the Attorney General's office, need to defend, you have the defense side, but you also need to look and make sure that your primary objective is doing justice. And if a case is brought, and there's pretty good reasons to think the HBCU cases have some real merit to them and have some real heft, you might want to start looking at how you structure settlements to do justice and make sure that you're achieving the best policy ends and not just in a reflexive, defensive posture. And I don't want to cast any aspersions on the current Attorney General's office and how they handle
it. I'm not going to do any of that.
But I just mean as a general philosophy, I think your main obligation is to do justice in the state, and in many instances that will be achieved by vigorous defense at all costs. And sometimes that will need to be accomplished by taking a step back and looking for ways to alter the way state government operates. You know, when Steve Sachs was Attorney General, there's a lawsuit over the way certain individuals with mental illness were committed to institutions. And Attorney General Sachs didn't just defend the suit. He went in and evaluated how the state government was treating these individuals and made fundamental policy changes using that counseling function and having the view that his job was to do right by our people, not just win lawsuits.
So, because that's always been kind of a thorny question for many people, I mean, where that line lives for an attorney general. And the other things are the when you look at the AG's office and you talked when you first came in about consumer issues.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that? So it sounded great what you said, but what does that mean in terms of how you fight for everyday people and what kind of what do you see? What do you see as the leading issues around consumer protection or corporate wrongdoing
mm-hmm.
in the state of Maryland that you would go after if you were Attorney General?
Well, I see men and women of the middle class and a lot of folks who are just hanging on to the middle class that are the target of predators, small and large. I got really interested in this issue thanks to a Harvard Law School professor named Elizabeth Warren, who's moved
on. Now the U.S. Senator from Massachusetts, right?
She's moved on to other things. But she brought me this issue of credit card agreements. And at the time, credit card agreements were being used to jack up rates on men and women, including men and women who had actually met their minimum balance payments month in and month out. But the agreements were written in such this broad way that it gave the banks the power to really abuse them at will. And we discovered that some of these agreements literally had language, Mark, that said, we reserve the right to change any term of this contract at any time for any reason. Now, that's not a power that was given to the borrower, right? That was just a power afforded to the bank. And that struck me as absolutely unconscionable. And we put in legislation to change it, prevent that from basically say, look, if you want to change the rates on people prospectively, look, that's your right. You don't have to extend new credit to folks. But you don't get to change the rules on people after they've entered into a contract. So from there, we've gone on to battling all kinds of consumer abuse, tax refund anticipation loans. This is a pernicious practice where individuals who are would go into paid tax preparers and they'd be lured in with a promise of an immediate refund. And it turns out these weren't refunds at all. These were high interest rate loans against their refund that had massive prepaid interest charges, in some instances 300% prepaid interest. And mind you, the lender was getting paid back by Uncle Sam, so there was very little risk. So we put in bill to curb that practice. When it comes to the treatment of borrowers and consumers, you got to be on your toes because the industries that would take advantage of them are always moving, always looking for other opportunities.
So what are some of the other issues facing the AG's office? There's a civil rights division in the AG's office.
Mm-hmm.
What should be the focus there?
Oh, gosh. There's a lot of the things that you've talked about on your show, I think, are things that the civil rights division could be dealing with. We could have a better role in making sure that application of the criminal law is done in a way that doesn't disproportionately affect minorities. As you pointed out, with the marijuana arrests, disproportionate affect minorities. We know that our incarceration rates are that way. There's a lot of work that can be done in the AG's office, and there's more than 300 lawyers. They are representing all these different state agencies, from the Department of Labor Licensing and Regulation to the lottery. And one area that I think could be a very important to we have a lot of these great progressive laws that we pass in Annapolis, but we don't always have the enforcement of those laws to match and really put teeth.
So how does that occur?
So, as state AG, one of my priorities would be to put some teeth into some of these good laws. So, for example, you know, prevailing wage is something that we have put on the books to make sure that men and women who are working on state contracts get paid a prevailing wage, get paid what the market deserves, says they deserve. But we don't have as many men and women devoted to enforcing those laws. And when I talk to friends in the labor community, they say, look, there's clear evidence of dirty contractors cheating, but we need help putting these folks out of business. And to me, that's low-hanging fruit, putting teeth in the existing laws, getting rid of dirty contractors, and protecting the honest guys. That's something I would definitely be interested in. And there's plenty of other instances of progressive policies that we've put in place, and we need, you know, to have vigorous enforcement to make sure that we live up to the promises we've made.
410-319-8888. We know it's early on here. The race has not even begun, or it has begun in some levels. And people are, even candidates are not showing up for all the forums yet because it's so new. But We are here with one of our candidates. We want you to join us here. The future of our state partially is defined by the Attorney General. And we are joined by Delegate Bill Frick from Montgomery County, who is going to run for this office in the election of 2014. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Let me log on to Facebook, jump into Facebook, and you can put your comments there, and we will raise some issues that you raise here, or you can tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888, as we talk to Bill Frick, who is running to be Attorney General.
And I'm on Facebook as well. If folks want to get to me, it's always Facebook/VoteBillFrick, and on Twitter at Bill Frick. One of the side benefits is you'll get a lot of pictures of my cute kids, the Fricklets.
Oh my God! Fricklets, what?
If you follow me on Twitter, I'm a lawyer, I'm a legislator, and a doting father.
Well, as you should be. We all should be doting fathers. There's no question about that. I agree with that completely. But one of the, you know, when I look at all the people who are running for this, for the AG's office, it's politically people are going to have to try to parse this out. You've got two of you running from Montgomery County. Do I have that right?
Right.
Right. One a state senator and you. And Aisha Braveboy?
Yeah.
Running from Prince George's County. Mm-hmm. And Ben Cardin.
John
Cardin, running from here, he's a Baltimore County delegate. So you have your constituencies in some ways. None of you are really known statewide.
Right.
So the question is, what sets you apart? I mean, people can, you know, sometimes have their vote in terms of, well, this person looks like me. The vote in terms of this person represents the district next to me.
Well,
this is a big state, and there are no real conservative candidates running in this field at all,
no,
either.
No, and I actually haven't heard of any of the Republicans putting their hat in the ring for this job. We're starting to see a few Republicans talk about running for governor, but I haven't really seen that in the Attorney General's race. The filing deadline is not until February, so we won't know for sure, you know, who the candidates are until that filing deadline happens. But I'm not worried about the other candidates, Mark. I know why I'm doing this. I'm doing this because I can be the advocate that our middle class needs, to be the fighter for consumers, to be the fighter for seniors, to be the fighter to extend equal rights and civil rights. So I think I'll be able to get out there with a message of an activist attorney general, of a proactive attorney general who's not afraid to pick the big fights against powerful interests, which is what this job really is all about. If you or I have a problem with a big bank or with a service provider, the odds are pretty stacked against us. Maybe you can take them to court. Maybe the arbitration provisions prevent you. But the attorney general is this great equalizer. This is a job where you can go to battle for everyday people, working people, and make a huge difference. But you've got to have someone who wants to be proactive and pick those fights.
One of the things, when you said big banks, that made me think about this, that you saw the recent stories about what happened with Bank of America and employees testifying how they were told to lure people into these loans.
Right.
So what can our AG do about that? Bank of America is huge in the state of Maryland.
Well, that's exactly the point, is that when you're talking about big institutions, you and I as individual borrowers, you and I as individual consumers, don't have a lot of recourse. Oftentimes, there's arbitration provisions, or the stakes may be even so low that you have to take a day off work and go to small claims court. But the state AG can really make a big difference. A few years ago, when the city of Baltimore was in litigation against a major bank, the city of Baltimore was saying that this bank, through reverse redlining, was destroying communities because it was driving people into bad loans they couldn't afford. Foreclosures were becoming rampant. And there was pretty decent evidence that this practice was really happening. At the same time, the state of Maryland was putting our tax dollars into that very same institution. That struck me as totally nonsense, that one branch of state government would have one view of this institution and the other would say, take our tax dollars. So I created something that became known as the Lend Local Act, and the idea was to take your tax dollars and make sure that they're going into the community banks, because it's the community banks that really are investing in our communities to give small businesses the money that they need to grow and hire. So worked with a lot of advocates here in Baltimore, and had our press conference at Sophie's Crepes here, and had some great support from folks here, and ultimately passed this bill that puts state dollars into those institutions that commit to making loans to small businesses.
Can you, as Attorney General, either alone or in concert with other attorneys general around the country, pardon me, take on a place like Bank of America, who what these guys are claiming. I mean, you have to investigate it first, obviously. But they allegedly use these tactics to get homeowners and lure them into foreclosures, creating loan modifications that are kind of made huge profits for the bank, but made a lot of people lose their homes. What can you do about that as Attorney General?
Well, you absolutely. We have seen that the that we have seen class actions and multi-state investigations by attorneys general already, but we also need to make sure that the terms of those agreements are being met. And there was some recent news suggesting that the banks are falling pretty far behind on the what they had committed to doing through those multi-state settlement agreements on the servicing. But you know, from part of my passion for doing this and why Bill Frick would be the right choice for Attorney General is to be proactive and not wait until we've already seen so many people hit behind, to not wait until we've seen people be abused and then hope we can solve it through some settlement. You really need to be right out there at the front line identifying the problems as they're happening and stopping them before people fall underwater, before people lose their homes or their businesses.
Well, Delegate Bill Frick, thank you for coming to the studio. We look forward to talking with you more down the campaign trail.
Appreciate you having me on, Mark.
Appreciate you coming up to Baltimore and talking to the people here in our listening area, which goes down to your district as well. Bill Frick is delegate representing the 16th District running to be the next Attorney General in the race in 2014. Bill, good to have you in the studio. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
On the way out of here, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeCube, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeCube, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeCube invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. For more information, www.mecu.com. And The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Gunnery, and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is the capable Andre Melton, behind the glass right now. Our interns are Lila Warshaw, Albert Phillips Jr., Albert Phillips Jr., Daniel Dupree, Sinead Hawkins, Kamani Seldon, and working today, Alexander Rudy. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast, and our past shows, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And remember, you can download and podcast all of our stuff on iTunes. For Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM. Stay tuned now. Michelle Martin's behind me. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. Rest in peace. Bobby Blue Bland. Say you lost your man. You got a lot of problems all in your life. Well, they throw in a party for the brokenhearted, and it's members only tonight. Go tell mama.